Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Big week this week.
Big week.
I was previewing the newsletter, and I realized just how many words that we posted this week, and it's lots.
It's a lot
of words.
A lot.
So I actually made sure I have put into the newsletter script now that if we put a break, if we do a break in the story where you have to follow it, if you're looking at the homepage to the full page, it's just going to do the break in the newsletter. So people are going to have to tap through. But like, I can't do a newsletter with hundreds of thousands of words in it. It's not possible. So I just changed the logic there. Before it only looked for the break if there was a tag on the article, but now it just, if there's a break, it just, it breaks it in the newsletter because you put the breaks there because they're too big. And I don't want to do that. It's too much. It's too much. So people can send me feedback. If there's anybody out there who actually reads the newsletter and cares, let me know. But I don't know how else I would do it because this week would have been too much. There's your iOS review and my iPadOS follow-up. I did a big article about photos that's based on stuff that's going to be in the new version of my book. We did a bunch of like little articles about Safari extensions and Amazon announced a new Kindle. I reviewed the new iPad Mini. Like there was a lot of posts this week is what I'm saying.
It's the fall.
And yesterday I just posted my thing that was inspired by my friend Mondi Ashley, which is the I'm coming from this old iPhone. What's new in the iPhone 13? Was interesting to compile, and I'm sure there are mistakes in it. There's a lot of data here, but what I'm trying to do is a simplified sort of like, tell me what's different, because all the reviews are about what's different from last year. And it's like, well, tell me what's different from the iPhone 10, right? Or the iPhone 7.
Right.
So I tried to do that. So there's a lot going on there is what I'm saying. A lot of words this week.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice to have stuff to write about, which is good, but it also meant like when my turn yesterday rolled around to like turn in my Macworld column, I was like, I cannot word anymore.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I will return to wording next week.
I did a big chunk of this, old iPhone to new iPhone research project like a week ago, and I first off I had to write that iPad OS story, which I wrote on last Friday on the iPad Mini with a Bluetooth keyboard. Because then I needed to write the iPad Mini review, so I was trying to use the iPad Mini to do a bunch of stuff. And I came back yesterday. I had one of those mornings where like my day was clear. I was like, what am I going to write about? And I went for a run. And as I'm running, I thought, oh yeah, it's that. I need to do the thing that Monty suggested. I need to wrap that up. I need to actually get that in shape. That is what I should do today. And so that's what I did. I like it when that pops in there, because that's working for yourself. One of the problems that I have, more than any other, I think, is that moment where you don't have a very clear next step. You've got like 10 things to do, all of equal priority, and all of them need to be done eventually, but none of them need to be done right away. And so you're sitting there going, I don't know. And those are hard decision points. So that one popped out and I was happy it did. But yeah, it's been like, I have iPhones. I need to write, and you're going to work with me on it too. Like, we got to review the new iPhones. I know everybody else already reviewed the new iPhones, but like, we're going to give our six colors take on it. Right.
Right.
And so that's floating out there is yet another thing. That's hard to word sometimes.
Yeah, it is a little. There's only so many words.
I did take a bunch of pictures yesterday. That was part of my step toward the iPhone, is that we had a little thing a little bit post my wife's birthday. It was Lauren's birthday last week, but we went to this place in Sausalito, right on the water, out in the air. It's great for a little celebration dinner-y kind of thing. And I took the iPhone because it's like, I don't get out of the house that much, especially like when lighting conditions are weird and there's like people and interesting things to take pictures of. That doesn't happen to me that much. So that was fun because I got to use the iPhone 13 Pro camera and cinematic mode and all of those kind of things. That was fun to do. That was a good thing to do with my time. Cinematic mode, by the way, it looks fun. I think Apple made a, I mean, it's typical Apple, but like, I think they made a mistake in trying to treated as professional in any way, because it's not. It's fun, though. It looks cool. That's my review of it so far, is that it's fun to shoot video with that cinematic style.
Right. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not a... Yeah, there are a lot of people sort of that were deriding it for, like, it's just portrait mode for video. And it seems like it's a little... I mean, A, there's nothing wrong with that. B, I feel like it does, it's got, like, a little more going on there. But, yeah, it is, you know, with some of the auto-focusing stuff.
Yeah, well, because it has to be dynamic about it because you're shooting
video.
It. It still sometimes feels a little camcordery to me. But, like, the effect is nice, and it looks very distinct from the flat... smartphone video that you usually see, and I like that about it. But again, I think it's more realistically, it is, you know, when we talk about what pro means, this is a prosumer kind of feature, because the pros aren't going to use this, I don't think.
No, they have professional equipment.
There was a link that went around to that music video that the YouTuber, Jonathan Morrison, shot using the iPhone in cinematic mode, and it's got some good things in it. I think it's actually a better endorsement of image stabilization, because it looks real smooth for a video shot by a guy holding a camera holding an iPhone walking backward, right? It's way more, I mean, like, the stabilization stuff is really amazing, but every time the singer, like, lifts her arms and you get the little space between the torso and the arm that we know in portrait mode is always misfocused. It's misfocused, right? It's just, so it's like nobody, again, it doesn't matter if you're just shooting fun videos for yourself and your family. They just look cool and all of that, but that's all. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being that. It's just that I think it's kind of unfair to the feature, in fact, to try and make it seem like this is professional, professional videography. Also, I thought it was pretty rich. The whole Apple was telling Matthew Panzerino over at TechCrunch that you know, they learned from years of cinematography, and then they realized that the gaze was the most important part of this. And it's like, come on. You built portrait mode. You've got facial recognition stuff and neural engine that you built for all sorts of other cameras. Like, it's not like you studied film history and then decided to invent a feature. Like, this feature is literally the pieces of this that you already had.
While you were shooting YouTube videos, Jason, they were studying the gaze, okay?
I guess so. I mean, like, it's... I don't know. Anyway, it's a fun feature. What I'm saying is I used it last night and it was fun. And that's, I think, why it's...
Well, and I think if portrait mode, you know, over the last several years has been any indication, Apple will tweak and improve it as it goes along, and the technology will get better, too. It's not necessarily ever going to be a perfect replacement for a super high-end camera, but it gets better and better, and who knows, at some point, it may be sufficient that, you know, most people can't tell. It's funny, because, I don't know, I see people who are... I feel like much more perceptive than I am about those kinds of disparities, point them out sometimes. And I can generally notice them when people point them out, but a lot of times I'm not seeing the same thing. It flies beneath my radar, right? Like, it might strike me as like, oh, there seems like there's something odd about that. But if you ask me to point to what exactly, I have to like stare at it for a while. So for a lot of people, let's not forget just not only the pro side, but the consumer side. A lot of people who are looking at stuff shot with cinematic video are going to think, wow, that looks really good, right? And they won't notice the little details where it's like, oh, that's not quite right. And when they do, they'll just be like, well, you know, it still looks pretty good.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Is if somebody's put in a professional context, they're going to notice it and it's not going to be good. But most of us aren't, and it won't be, and it'll just be fun, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You're waiting for your iPhone, right?
I'm waiting for my iPhone. We'll see if it arrives. I've had some problems with packages showing up at the new house sometimes. I don't know why. I think I have a package. I ordered some tea, Jason, from our fine friends at the New Mexico Tea Co.
Oh, yeah? Sure.
And I've bought tea from them for years. I've always been very happy. And I think something happened where my tea entered a vortex.
Oh, no.
I think what happened was we had a helpful mail carrier who would... take stuff that got delivered to the new house and deliver it to the apartment and be like, you should update your fix your address. Because they're across the street from each other. They're only like one digit off.
Right.
And So, you know, we just didn't bother doing anything about that because, like, well, you know, there's stuff that goes to the house eventually. And, you know, we set up mail forwarding and all that. And I think what happened is helpful mail carrier looked at the address, thought, oh, I know this is the old house. I'm going to take it over here, and then saw that there was a mail forwarding on it. And then they tried to forward it, but because the address on it was correct and the address, and it was the same as the address they were trying to forward it to, I think it entered sort of
you kept Kirk to the postal service, and they're like, but yeah, your old address must be your new address, but the new address forwards to the old address. Error.
Smoke coming out of everywhere. Our local POS office. Yeah, so I've literally gone on to the USPS website and initiated a lost, like, missing mail search.
No.
Like, find this mail. At some point, I may give up and email the lovely people at the New Mexico TCO and just be like, this just didn't happen.
Maybe
sorry.
You should put a sign on wherever your mail drop is that says, yes, really, Dan and Kat moved from over there to over here. This is the right place
now. It's funny because
now.
The old mailbox literally has like a sticker that the post office has clearly put on it telling them to route mail. Like, there's like a little sticker they put on the inside of our old mailbox. And
like,
I just,
yes,
like,
really, Santa Cat moved over there.
I
turn around.
Don't
turn
know
around.
What
let
else
us
we can do. Short of tackling the mail
away.
Carrier. Yeah, I guess that's the answer.
Well, I hope you get the. It's very exciting because it could be that the UPS person is going to knock at your door while we're doing this podcast. At which point you would have to leap from your office. Down the stairs.
Run. Yeah, hopefully not fall down two flights of stairs, or a flight and a half of stairs or whatever. I this assumes, of course, that they knock and or ring a doorbell and that I hear it while I'm in my headphones. So this would be a great test of a number of variables.
I guess so.
But I will say UPS on iPhone Day in general and UPS in general, my neighborhood doesn't show up here until
at least
the afternoon.
The listeners to this podcast know that it generally is later.
Generally is late.
So let's see. I wanted to ask you about or thank you, I guess, for Safari Keyword Search, which you wrote about, which you have used on the Mac, right? But the thing here basically is, like, it's now on iOS because Safari extensions exist in Safari 15 on iOS 15. And I love it. Having a quick search in the bar for Safari is a lot of fun. So thank you.
I've been using that. I believe John Syracuse is also an aficionado, but I've been using that on the Mac for a long time. It went away at one point when Apple changed the extension architecture. You had to, like, there was a thing where they changed the framework and it couldn't do certain things for a while. And then they revamped the whole framework and it came back, which I think was just earlier this year, which is what surprised me when I looked it up, because I was like, wait a second. It was just in like March that came back. Now that the extension framework works across platforms, it's available on iOS. And I have to say, like, I watched the extension WWD sessions and I was like, what they showed off was promising. And I think now that stuff is actually, it's come out and we can actually get them. Because that was the problem during, you know, the beta period.
Yeah, unless you know somebody who's got a test
flight
or something, yeah.
You couldn't test it. So I've been really impressed with the stuff I've seen so far. Keyword search is great.
Yeah,
I haven't been able to use 1Password, but it looks cool.
Yeah, somebody said that, that pointed out that DuckDuckGo has some, like, little shortcuts. But one, I don't use DuckDuckGo. And two, the point here is that you can put your own stuff that you use in. So, like, I have a 6 colors thing, which
same.
I'm sure you do too. In fact, I have 2 because I'm testing out whether I want to use Google constrained to the site or whether I want to use the actual site search.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So one of them, I have SC for one and 6C for the other, and I'm just going to figure that out. But it's great. On my Mac, I use Launch Bar. I actually have a custom search template in Launch Bar. It's the same concept, right? So I type 6 and 6 colors comes up. And then I hit, I think, space bar, and then start typing a, is that what it is? Is it space bar? Yeah. And then I type a query and hit return and it searches for it. You can't do that on the iPad and the iPhone. So having that little extension is great. And then I wrote about Noir, which is another really good extension. There are a couple, but that's the one that I've been using. And it's so smart. It's literally, if you're in dark mode, and by default anyway, if you're in dark mode and the site that you're on doesn't have a dark mode, it makes a dark mode. So that if you're in looking at your iPad or your iPhone in the dark and you get to one of those blaringly loud white background websites with Noir, it turns it into a dark mode site. And it works pretty well. There are sites that are badly behaved and there's a little, you can submit to them like it didn't work. And I think the developer will look at it. But like just another really nice little quality of life thing. And I was listening to Connected this week and Federico recommended a plugin to Mike that is basically, it turns off all the cookie notices. And he said, if you're in Europe, you get the cookie notices everywhere and you need to take them off. And I thought, or California, actually, because California has a similar kind of law. And that means that if you're in California and they detect your IP address, you also get a lot of cookie notices. So there's this app called, oh, let me see if I can find it now. Oh, where is it? This is good podcasting.
It's good podcasting.
Is it Momentum? Nope, that's a focus page. That's another plugin that changes your start page in Safari.
Oh yeah.
And it's not Overamped and Amplosion, which redirect away from Google Amp links. Which
that's
some
good one.
I know some people don't care about it, but like we're also in the business of linking to things. And I'm not going to link to a weird Google Amp link of somebody's article. I want to link to the actual. Well, I can't find their link. Anyway, it was a plugin that just, that's all it does is it just goes, no cookie notices. It's like.
Oh yeah. There was, I know what you're talking about because I had it on my Mac at one point. I feel like, was it Hush?
I don't know what this one had a weird name. I wonder if it's still in beta because it's not in the show notes for Connected this week. Anyway,
Hush will do that in theory, and I think it's available on iOS.
Last year, I interviewed a guy who was the developer of a very popular extension for Firefox and Chrome called Library Extension, and which is great because it like overwrites Amazon Pages to say if your book's at the library and stuff. It's cool. And he said he was thinking about doing a Safari version. It was a lot of extra work because that's a complex extension. And although Apple talks a good game about like, oh, you can just bring your extensions over. It was actually a lot harder than that. And I haven't heard from him. He doesn't seem to have progressed with that project anymore. But one of the things that we talked about at that time was, you know, Safari would be a much more attractive platform to write to if you got access to everybody who has an iPhone and iPad, right?
Sure. It's way bigger than on the Mac, right?
Yeah. So I think we will see. I think this is the thing that's going to drive a lot of extensions, Safari extensions existing, is now you get access to the iPhone, and that's a big deal. So it's not going to be mostly for regular users, but for people like Six Colors listeners and subscribers, I think it's going to be really good because we get to tweak what happens in our web browser just that much more. And
yeah, there's a lot more now, which is like, I think it's nice that Apple opened this up because it does feel like there's just many more things that are feasible when you're looking at this. I mean, I saw that the picture-in-picture like extension I use is available. I think Stop the Madness, which is a feature I use on the Mac, is available.
Yeah.
You know, all this stuff that previously you couldn't really do. I bought one on my iPhone that's a HTML page inspector, which has never been a thing.
Oh, wow.
And that's so cool. It's like, oh, man, this is actually super useful because I definitely use that on my Mac a lot.
So the one that I want, and I have actually thought about asking somebody to develop this or looking into how simple a Safari extension can possibly be. Mm-hmm. Is we have a chain of newspapers in the Bay Area, the Bay Area News Group, and they're all essentially the same website. Like, you can literally, if you're a subscriber to the Marin Independent Journal, which we are, and somebody links to something on the San Jose Mercury News, if you literally change the domain to the one you're a subscriber of, marinij.com, sure, the article loads. Because it's really all just the same website. But the subscriptions don't cross over. So what I want to do is create an extension that basically lets you set which one is your home. And if it sees URLs from any of the other domains, the East Bay Express, is that right? Oakland Tribune, San Jose Mercury, it will just redirect it to the right one. And you could totally do that, although it won't work in web views in other apps. It's only in proper Safari because that's extensions don't work in little web views. Anyway, it's probably pretty easy to do. That's a basic redirect kind of thing. So I might even explore that at some point. I have a shortcut that does that now, that I basically feed it a link and it turns it into the right one and opens it in a window. But that would be a great example of an extension that would be like the overamped one. It's just running some pattern matching and then redirecting to another location.
Yeah. So lots of stuff to like there. I also discovered at some point, I think this is true this week, I discovered I was having that trouble with, they've got the mail protection privacy thing and where it doesn't load images in your mail messages if it cannot load them securely.
Huh.
So that's intended to be there as like the tracking obfuscation issue. And I mentioned in my review, like I've noticed sometimes it feels extra aggressive and it doesn't load any of the images in my mail. And I think what I've determined is the case there is if you have mail protection privacy on, but private relay off on a network, that's when it doesn't load all the stuff. So it must depend on that somehow, which was a weird thing I discovered because I had it off for my home network thinking, well, I do some stuff related to, my external IP address here. I don't necessarily want that hidden all the time and it's my home network. So I have a higher degree of trust here than elsewhere. But yeah, I think that screws with the mail protection privacy thing. I can't tell if that's intended, as designed or unforeseen bug. But that's the fun of iOS 15, your 0.0 releases is, so there's still stuff that needs to get worked out.
Yeah, a little bit. That's fine. We're in this part of the year now. I've enjoyed my time with the iPad mini.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those things. It's really good. It's really good. I'm not sure it fits in my life, but that's not the point. Like, I'm trying to review this for everybody. I think I love having an e-ink ebook reader. One of my frustrations is that it's not as good at other things as I'd like it to be. And I know, like, I have a Kobo and it's got Pocket integration. So theoretically, I could send a bunch of things or RSS feeds or I don't even know what to Pocket, which I don't use. And I might be able to do it. But like, I read so many things on my iPad and I only read books on my Kindle or my Kobo. And like, I like the appeal of a smaller reader because my iPad is huge. But at the same time, once you get an iPad as your reader, you are getting push notifications. And I mean, you can use focus mode and stuff, but like you're more able to be distracted, but it's also more flexible, right? And everybody's written apps for iOS. And so it may not be for me because I have a Kindle and I have a big iPad, but like that iPad mini, not only will it do literally anything, like I edited a podcast with it, I wrote on it, like it's a full-fledged iPad Air essentially, which is basically an iPad Pro.
So they're all the same is what you're
saying.
It's an iPad mini, which is basically an iPad Air, which itself is an iPad Pro.
Yeah. Other than some functionality that's in the hardware, but like in terms of like, can I use this to do X with software? The answer is yes. Like it's, I can see some real appeal for it as a, reading. It's not as good as, it'll do video, but it's not as good. It's a small screen and, it doesn't have the kind of fancy screen that the pros do. But like as a reader, that you can have this newspaper app and this website and this RSS reader and this book reader, and they're all just on that iPad. It's very good. So it's not only capable, but the size is so nice. I think it's going to be successful, and I think for a lot of people, the base model will be enough because I think most people are not going to say, well, I need lots of storage and cellular or whatever. Like the base model, which doesn't have a lot of storage, I think it's 64, but like if it really is just sort of a basic kind of reader, you got to have good eyes though because everything on that screen is little. It's a very dense, compact thing, but it's a great little product. I only wrote a couple thousand words on it because, I mean, it's kind of not new in the sense that we've seen almost all of this before in another product, but it's all wrapped up in a really nice small package.
Yeah, right. I think there's a lot of temptation around it. I think the biggest issue with the iPad mini for me fitting it into my workflow is not having that keyboard always available is a detriment for me. I understand it's probably a plus for other people as well, because it means this is lighter and you don't have a bulky keyboard attached to it the whole time. But seeing as how much of what I use the iPad for generally involves some form of text entry, I love having the keyboard available. Yeah, but it's still an extremely capable device. And if I were ever in a situation where it's like, maybe I need two separate iPads, the mini like certainly fits the bill for some of that. And of course, it also, you know, that's the kind of thing that makes you wonder about Apple's plans for doing foldable phones or something like that, too, because the idea of it's a small tablet or a large phone. There's some appeal to that. And we saw also this week, which we didn't write about, but the Surface team unveiled a whole bunch of stuff they'd been working on, including the new version of their Surface Duo, right? That unfoldable device.
It's a two-screen phone, basically.
Yeah, exactly. But it's probably closer to an iPad mini size, almost. Hard to tell.
I don't know.
Yeah, but I think it's nice that Apple updated the iPad mini, as with their other products that are, you know, sometimes revved in very, very odd intervals, like the Mac mini. I think it shows that they feel like there's a value to it, but that it's not a value that necessarily needs to be updated every year. I think it does raise a question for me about the next revision of the iPad Air, which is now a year old and is outpowered by the mini some respects.
In graphics a little bit, but because they've underclocked the A15 and the iPad mini, it's not actually faster than the iPad Air.
But it does lack some features. It doesn't have center stage.
I'd say that's the big one. Because the A15, they could release a non-underclocked with center stage Air, and that would be nice. And in fact, I bet they will. I don't know if that'll be, you know, before next spring, but they could totally do that.
Probably not. I would imagine, refresh times on the iPads are always a little bit weird. I mean, the Pro sometimes gets refreshed like every year and sometimes goes maybe a year and a half. I feel like the Air has gone a year, between a year and like 2 years at various times.
My only thought is, I'm not sure now that they've made this big change to the iPad Air that they did the last time, all they're going to do is make an incremental change. So I think that they will in this cycle, whether it's now, which would be a year, or whether it's in 6 months, which would be a year and a half. I think you're exactly right. I think they will do an A15 and they'll put that new camera in it and turn on center stage, because they want all the iPads to have center stage, and they want, well, except for the cheap one, and they can put the A15 in it and it'll be a little bit faster. Like
rejigger the storage and price dynamics, because as we discussed, you and I discussed at some point, the pricing dynamics are a little strange in terms of where the upsells are and whether there's a niche for these.
I think they will do that, because I don't think there's a big change coming. It's really just going to be, you know, chip and that camera refresh, and that may be literally it. And that's okay. Like, that's okay. I think that would get the Air back up to being, you know, in parity with the mini, and that's... You know, that's the definition of what an iPad looks like right now, is the iPad Air and the iPad Mini. This is it. These are base features. Everybody, you know, they're the features the Pro has, and then there's the features that everybody has. And center stage is becoming a feature everybody has. It's just a matter of time before they stick that camera in the... They bought a lot of those cameras. They're going to stick them in the iPad Air.
This is a selfish thing for me, because I think I'm probably getting to the point of needing a new iPad and trying to figure out, do I get an Air or a Pro? Is one of those things where, well, right now, as we discussed, like, yeah, you could buy an Air, but to get to the storage options, you're in Pro territory, like price wise. So do you just spend the extra money to get the Pro? I'm looking forward to seeing them hopefully clarify that a little bit, just in terms of how they structure it. Because right now, I think it's the Air is rarely the best value. And I think that's not probably where they want it to be. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Anything else going on that we should talk about? I feel like we got... I mean, there's a lot happening. Like, I have the new iPhones. They're nice. Of course they're nice. They're always nice. The cameras are good. We already talked about the cinematic mode. The whole photographic
styles
thing is really interesting. I played with that a little bit last night. I like the idea of like just make your photos look like you like. They can be colder or warmer or more contrasty or less contrasty, and you can just do it, and then they look like that. And they're not quite a filter. They're better than a filter because they're in the pipeline, but also means that they're like when you take them, that's what they are. They're never going to be something else because it's not an overlay. It's actually part of it's burned into the photo. But yeah, I mean, everybody's going to get their iPhones today, right?
Yes, it's iPhone day. And we'll see. I mean, we're already starting to see. It's always fun when the people get the iPhones and realize, oh, there's like little bugs and stuff going on already. Like there was one, apparently there's one where the watch unlock isn't working for some people. People pointed out that it doesn't fit very well on that really expensive MagSafe charger that Apple makes, which is very funny.
Yeah.
It's like a $130 charger and it doesn't work very well with it. You know what? That charger is not a bad idea, but it needs to be cheaper and it needs to work clearly work better with their own products. So that feels very like the kind of thing Apple does every once in a while where it's like, oh, this little detail. Well, we had forgotten all about that charger.
That's a really misbegotten kind of product.
It's a great idea. It is just too expensive. Because I love the idea of a small charger that you can take with you to travel and you flip it open and charge your watch and your phone. Like, that's very clever. I would pay $50 for that product.
Okay, but now we have to apply my rules to that, right?
Yep. Which is what, double it and add some?
Well, you round up, so it's $100, okay. and then you add, so it's $150. What does the thing actually cost?
Which is, it's like $130.
Yeah.
So,
see?
What I want is Belkin or somebody to make the knockoff version that's $50.
Right.
And that sounds great.
Yeah. All right, well, good luck getting your iPhone, and good luck to everyone out there who's waiting for their iPhones, and congratulations to everybody who's already got them. And for those of you who haven't gotten an iPhone, it's fine, because you shouldn't get an iPhone every year. It's, you know, it's we do it because it's our business, and some people do it because it's an indulgence and it's a thing they like, but most people don't, and that's fine. You don't need to feel bad if you're not one of those people. And I wrote an article that compares your phone to the new phone if you're curious about.
There you go. And you'll know everything.
And next week, who knows more. It's that time of year. But we'll be back then, just as Kalendar, our overlord, insists we will be. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.